WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. A massive hurricane is ready to slam into Florida's Big Bend region along the West Coast. Governor DeSantis has just given an update.
Hurricane Idalia is now a Category 4 storm. That means sustained winds in excess of 130 miles per hour. The hurricane will make landfall within the next 2 hours. In and around Taylor County in the Big Bend region.
Idalia's storm surge has just set a new record for water levels in the Tampa Bay area. It's up to almost 4 feet, and CBS meteorologist David Parkinson expects it will increase dramatically.
Idalia has an unsurvivable storm surge, 12 to 16 feet in the Big Bend area. The reason, because if you look at a map of Florida where you connect the main part of Florida with the panhandle, it looks like one big elbow and all the water's getting pushed and funneled into there. It's got nowhere to go, so it's going on to land.
Power is now out to almost 86,000 customers in the state. The Biden administration says it will allocate $95 million to improve Hawaii's electric grid after the Maui wildfire. CBS Honolulu's Chelsea Davis says the cleanup is about to get underway.
Once the Environmental Protection Agency has removed all the hazardous materials from the affected areas, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will work to remove personal property debris. Officials say they are working with local community leaders during this entire process.
We've been working since we got here with cultural leaders, archaeologists from Maui and especially from the Lahaina area.
Officials in Kyiv say at least 2 people have been killed in drone and missile strikes. Russia says an airport near its border with Estonia has been hit by Ukrainian drones. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
A Russian state news agency says several transport planes were damaged. Russia's foreign ministry said today Ukrainian drones could not have flown such a distance without information from the West, and added Russia won't leave the attacks unpunished. The drones hit an area more than 500 miles from the Ukrainian border.
As the next presidential election nears, X, formerly Twitter, is reversing a years-long decision to ban political ads. Tech contributor Ian Schur.
One of the biggest concerns a lot of experts have is that allowing political advertising opens the doors to candidates spreading falsehoods and lies far easier and cheaper than they otherwise would through radio or print or television.
New study finds aspirin can help prevent another heart attack or stroke in people who've already had one. Researchers say fewer than half who could benefit take it. S&P futures down 3. This is CBS News.
At Staples, school savings are always in session. From art supplies and essentials to the latest tech, in stock and priced low. School on, save on at your local Staples store.
The kids are heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
For over a century, AM radio has evolved to meet the needs of our community. More than 80 million listeners depend on AM radio each month. It's also the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping us safe in dangerous times. A new bill in Congress would ensure this free, reliable service remains in cars. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM radio for every vehicle act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Where it's another beautiful day up north. Welcome to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Wednesday, August 30th. I'm Pat Breitlove here on Lake Wissota on this National Beach Day and National Toasted Marshmallows Day. Toasted. We don't need to burn them. S'mores done right. Part of our mission at Up North News is to help overcome a certain level of cynicism about government. And look, it's always nice to have a healthy dose of skepticism about things. But it really appears that over the past couple of generations in government, we've taken it to the point where some people have fooled themselves into the notion that government doesn't do anything right. And that's simply not true. You know, the snow does get plowed from our roads. We do have clean water. We do have a lot of things that go right here. An air traffic control system that prevents mid-air collisions. And on it goes. A radio spectrum where you can hear local radio stations and not six stations at once competing for one another. And so those things need to be talked about every so often. And you know, yesterday we talked to Ben Murray about the things that have been happening in veterans' health care and how the Biden administration is doing things that are taking better care of our veterans. Today we're going to talk about rural development across Wisconsin. That's something that's done in part by the federal government through the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They have a rural development arm. Its state director is Julie Lassa, a former state senator who served with me in the legislature, and she's going to join us at the bottom of the hour to outline some of the recent hometown projects that USDA is helping to fund. They range from broadband to rural health care, clean water, job training, affordable housing, and more. So we'll have that rather positive discussion coming up a little bit later on. If you missed our last hour, we talked a bit about the new Republican legislator's tax proposal. We'll probably get more into it again later this half hour. But if you want to hear that full episode, all of our shows are available as a podcast later. You just have to go to civicmedia.us or stream us as a podcast. Go to Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite shows. We also have a special edition of the Up North News daily newsletter. We still have the regular one that comes out at 5 a.m., but we put together a special edition. It came out late Monday, and it's more about back to school, and it has more of a policy and politics bent to it, a little bit of lighter information as well. But if you'd like to see it, and if you're not a current newsletter subscriber, just go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and you'll see the special edition of our newsletter. It has a link right there. Click on it, and you'll be able to see it, read it, give us a little bit of feedback, and tell us what you think about what you're seeing in terms of back to school, who's looking out for our kids, who's helping to make sure that we have a learning environment that is, you know, safe and productive, uses our tax dollars wisely, and still creates a good future for all of us. Up here in Chippewa Falls, the strike at the Leinenkugel Brewery has come to an end, and that is a mostly good thing. It's worth noting that the 40-plus workers who were on the picket lines for 51 days, while they didn't get everything that they want, is certainly the impression that I'm getting. They did win, you know, some a better package that is going to benefit the younger workers there. A lot of the workers who were striking were in the later stages of their careers and knew that if you were going to get a better deal for future workers, they were the ones in a position to do it. Because as we all know, when you're a younger worker, you are perhaps less likely to stand up to a massive corporation. And let's not kid ourselves. That's what we're talking about here. The Leinenkugel Brewery here in Chippewa Falls, started by the Leinenkugel family, they're still here. They are still immensely wonderful people. But, you know, some time back, they became a part of Miller, which then became a part of SAB, which then became Miller Coors, which is now Molson Coors, like the number five beer maker in the world. It is a massive corporation. And so these workers that were striking in Chippewa Falls were doing so to get treated better by people at a corporate headquarters who might even not be able to find Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin on a map. So to the extent that they got noticed and made things a little bit better for the younger workers who are still going to be brewing beer in Chippewa Falls, we salute you. I will again be able to pick up some summer shandy, and I will toast you with my next glass of that. So we just wanted to call attention to that strike coming to an end in Chippewa Falls. And so folks who may have been, as I was, you know, boycotting any products made by Molson, Miller, and Coors, that strike has reached a settlement, very happy to say. And then just one quick note about Hurricane Idalia, because obviously the national news is covering that, but it is something that if you have friends, acquaintances, family in Florida, do make sure they're taking this seriously. Obviously, the people near the Gulf Coast in the northern parts of Florida are, but wherever people are, and not just there, as this thing crosses over today into southern Georgia, it will still be a hurricane. It will still be a hurricane as it heads back out to sea over the Carolinas. 130-mile-an-hour winds, storm surges of anywhere from 6 to 16 feet, depending on the area. So I just hope people will take that seriously because we aren't going to be done. Hurricane season has a little bit longer to go. And with a changing climate making storms very intense that much more quickly, it's all the more reason not to joke around with this kind of stuff. We'll get our own forecast for a very hot Labor Day weekend coming up from Weatherology in just a bit. And then we'll have a little bit more to say about that proposed Republican income tax plan at the state level and how it's still just too much of a giveaway to the very wealthy rather than Wisconsin's middle class. You're up north. We'll be back.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
If you missed it, today's history lesson and music break noted that on this day in 1969, there was this band out of Birmingham, England called Earth. And their lead singer did not like the name, said it needed a new name. The lead singer was Ozzy Osbourne, and he said this name is now called Black Sabbath. 7 a.m. temps include 50 degrees up here on Lake Wasota, 57 in La Crosse. Hayward coming in at 41, Oshkosh at 50 degrees, 49 in Madison, Waukesha at 48. Again, it's going to get hot this weekend, but we're not there yet by any stretch. A little chilly this morning. Jennifer Vucicki from Weatherology is going to tell us more about the forecast all across the state of Wisconsin. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, like you said, it's going to be a pretty decent week overall coming in, but we are looking at a very hot forecast coming up as well. So today we're looking at actually our coolest day for this particular day, or for this particular forecast. Sunny skies across the board, a little cooler overall as that cold front finally pushed through the area. Mid to low 70s for afternoon highs, slightly below average for this time of the year. The coolest spot actually dropping into the upper 60s around Milwaukee. A warm front begins to push through for the second half of the work week with sunny skies Thursday and Friday. Only slightly warmer on Thursday, mid 70s to right around about 80 degrees. Again, a little cooler around Lake Michigan. Then low to mid 80s for Friday, mostly upper 70s from Oshkosh down to Milwaukee. Then continuing to warm up for the Labor Day weekend ahead. Sunny skies both days, mid to low 90s expected for most on Saturday, upper 80s around Oshkosh, which is going to be the story for the holiday weekend. Oshkosh just slightly cooler overall. Sunday, high pressure system settles in, hot highs in the mid to upper 90s mostly. Then for the Labor Day holiday coming up on Monday, essentially the same expected. Sunny skies, highs in the mid to upper 90s.
Hey, we will take that. I got a note recently from the folks that put our boat and our dock in and out every year, and they say, well, it's time to pick a date for the boat and the dock to come out for the fall and winter. And I looked at your forecast, and I sent a note. Not yet. That's all I can tell you. At some point, it'll be time to bring in the boat and the dock. Definitely not anytime soon, it sounds, Jennifer.
Definitely not, no. Definitely take advantage of it.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right, we've mentioned the temperatures around the area in the 40s and 50s right now, but again, going to get really hot before all is said and done. As always, you're welcome to join the show at 844-967-2789. Brewer starter Corbin Burns had a heck of a game last night, but it just wasn't enough as the Cubs beat the Brewers 1-0 at Wrigley Field last night, breaking the Brewers' 9-game winning streak. The wind was blowing in, so none of some very well-hit balls could get out from the Brewer bats. The finale is this afternoon, and then they will be home for a series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Catch the Brewers in the Fox Valley on Oshkosh Air Support and in the Richland Center area on News from the Center. All right, before we get to the main new proposal in the state capitol, which is a new Republican bill with tax cuts aimed toward the very wealthy, we need to first talk about another bill that also perfectly exemplifies where Republicans and conservatives come down on the subject of whether something is counted as regulations or as protections. And I think you already know what side of the street I come down on when it comes to that. A lot of the things that people say, we've got to cut those regulations, a lot of times they're there for a reason, because they protect somebody, a worker, a consumer, the environment, what have you. So I guess I shouldn't have been too surprised to hear about this bill that a Wisconsin Republican is sponsoring that would weaken the oversight of roadside zoos. Now, why a state legislator is worried about making it easier for roadside zoos to be less safe is far beyond me, but let's dive into it anyway. According to this story from the Associated Press, Wisconsin zoos could escape state oversight if the operation earns accreditation from a particular organization that animal rights advocates have blasted for having weak animal treatment standards. The way it stands right now in Wisconsin, zoos are exempt from state Department of Natural Resources license requirements if they get accreditation from something called the American Zoo and Aquarium Association, the AZA. But under the bill proposed by Senator Van Wongard and Representative Alex Dahlman, zoos would also be exempt from licensing requirements if they earn accreditation from the Zoological Association of America, the ZAA. Senator Wongard told the Senate committee yesterday that the reason for doing that is that the proposal would create, quote, parity and consistency for zoos. Wongard said, "It simply doesn't make sense for the state to require different licenses because a zoo uses different accreditation. This is a common sense bill that will simplify state license requirements." And right there, in a nutshell, explains why some people should be trusted to serve in government and some people should not be allowed to pass a bill that regulates a roadside zoo, much less a tax cut that would be aimed toward the middle class of Wisconsin. When he says it simply doesn't make sense for the state to require different licenses because a zoo uses different accreditations, the simple response is, yes, it does. Yes, it does. If there's two different accreditations, all right? If one zoo is accredited by standards by the American Zoo and Aquarium Association to live up to a higher, safer standard, and the other gets its license from Fred's Zoo Licensing Emporium and has different standards, then what Senator Wongard is saying about parity and consistency makes absolutely zero sense. And as groups have mentioned, the AZA standards, the current ones, are far superior to the ZAA, which has been trying to convince legislatures around the country to exempt its members from government oversight. Similar bills failed in Minnesota last year and Michigan in 2013. And according to Bethany Gengler, director of Roadside Zoo News, a website that posts news articles about animal abuse at roadside zoos, she told the committee the ZAA is a made-up accrediting organization for roadside zoos to dupe the unsuspecting public that the zoo they're visiting actually helps animals. The point is to remove DNR oversight. And I'm not going to get much deeper into the difference between all these and which, you know, who's used in the Milwaukee County Zoo and Disney and all of these others. I think we've already explained the point here, is that you can either get licensed and be inspected and live up to the standards of one group that is responsible or Fred's Zoo Licensing Emporium. They are not the same thing. They should not be treated the same way. And it is unbelievable and yet unsurprising that a couple of Republicans would try to dupe the rest of Wisconsinites into thinking they are the same and putting forth a bill like this. But again, it shouldn't be a big surprise because, as we mentioned, the other big action they took yesterday was to release a new tax cut plan. At the same time, making it clear that they are not going to go along with Governor Evers' invitation to a special session. Specifically, they're not going to do anything new to make child care more affordable. They're going to let the Child Care Counts program die, which is going to hurt parents all across Wisconsin and put more child care centers out of business. Instead, we get this proposal for a tax cut, which again is going to be vetoed by Governor Evers because the bulk of the support is going to go to people, married couples, earning between $36,000 a year and $405,000 a year. That is one single tax bracket in the state of Wisconsin. That is how far things have come toward flattening the tax code, is that somebody making $405,000 pays the same percentage of their income in tax as somebody making $36,000, which, of course, hello math, takes up a substantially larger chunk of the income that they need to feed their family and to keep a roof over their head. But again, with one bracket that size, with Wisconsinites, Wisconsin Republicans saying that this is the bracket they want to fill in and that they're not going to go along with Governor Evers, it continues to make the case for maybe not having a gerrymandered set of legislative maps where lawmakers can again cater to only one part of their base. This new Republican plan has already been looked at, according to an article by Eric Gunn in the Wisconsin Examiner, has already been looked at by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, and finds that nearly two-thirds of the income tax savings in the Republican proposal, nearly two-thirds of the income tax savings will go to the highest paid 20% of Wisconsin taxpayers with average incomes of over $304,000. Aiden Davis, State Policy Director for the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, says that, quote, a Wisconsin household in the top 1% of earners with an average income of $1.8 million a year will see an average tax cut of $3,561, while a Wisconsin household making $45,000 a year will see an average tax cut of $45. And it will lead to $3 billion in lost revenue that, again, could have gone to schools, to health care, to child care. And Davis says $3 billion in lost revenue over a two-year biennium is a hefty price to pay for an untargeted tax cut that provides the largest average dollar tax cut to Wisconsin's richest residents. Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line as well to talk about some of the headlines in the news today. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I saw in terms of the tax cut, I also saw in there the current Republican plan to increase retirement age, where they're talking about getting rid of the tax on retirement income, but they've got in there, it doesn't start to kick in until 67, rather than the age that a lot of people are retiring in the state between 62 and 65. So there's another, you know, just Republican, subtle Republican sign that they do not want you to retire. They want you to work until you're old and gray and can't enjoy your retirement anymore.
That is such an excellent point, and I did not bring that up. Thank you for adding that point. It goes right in line with what I was saying, I believe, yesterday about Nikki Haley saying that, well, we're not going to touch anybody now, but you young workers first coming in, we're going to raise the retirement age for you. And this is a party that says they want to get back in the good graces of young voters. And this is how you do it at the federal level from Nikki Haley and at the state level from legislative Republicans, again, saying, well, anything that we can do that keeps you in the workforce longer, that keeps you from retiring, is something that's going to work for us Republicans. I don't know how they expect to win over young voters without scare tactics or duplicity or what it is, because nothing I'm seeing here says let's get those young voters. Story just in that I'm just noticing from Lawrence Andrea from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, looks like Democrats Brad Paff and Deb McGrath will not seek to run against Derek Van Orden next year in the 3rd Congressional District. Right now, Rebecca Cook is the only announced Democrat to try to unseat Derek Van Orden, the freshman insurrection-adjacent Republican. We'll be back with Julie Lassa right after this. You're up north.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
CBS News special report, a still treacherous Category 3 Hurricane Idalia, it's been downgraded a notch, is set to slam into Florida's Big Bend in half an hour with winds of up to 125 miles an hour. CBS meteorologist David Parkinson.
First landfall time at around 8 a.m. Eastern. Now, that means that the center of the storm will cross land for the first time. You are already seeing the outer bands of the storm as far away as Fort Myers and as far east as Daytona Beach.
David expects storm surge of up to 16 feet in the Tampa Bay area. Water levels there have already set a new record. Power's out to more than 107,000 customers in the state. And there's more. Emergency Management Chief Kevin Guthrie.
We are seeing a lot of tornado warnings. So far, there have been 11, as the governor has said, of the four or five that have happened since about 3 a.m. this morning. At least three of those by our meteorologists have indicated radar-indicated tornadoes.
CBS News Special Report. I'm
Bandana, check. Boots, check. Gloves, check. As a motorcycle rider in Wisconsin, you may go to great lengths to protect your image. Just be sure you're protecting yourself, too. Wear a Department of Transportation-approved helmet. Perform safety checks on your motorcycle. Know the traffic laws and don't take risks. Motorists and motorcyclists can work together to achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roads. Zero in Wisconsin. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
AM Radio provides always-on news, sports, talk, traffic, and weather reports. It also delivers vital emergency information when your community needs it most. A new bill in Congress would ensure AM Radio stays in your car, because when cell and internet services are down, this free emergency service is critical. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to four messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
All right, let's talk about rural Wisconsin and the many ways that it can benefit from public servants who are doing right by the people who live and work and pay taxes there. And that happens in Wisconsin in part because of the rural development arm of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Sometime back, we talked with my old state Senate colleague, Julie Lassa, who is the state director now for the USDA Rural Development. And she joins us now to talk a bit more about what you've been up to lately. Julie, nice to see you. Good morning.
Hey, nice to see you too this morning, Pat.
Yeah,
it's been busy.
It has been. As I, you know, we get all of the emails each time that there's something new that USDA Rural is working on, and we've amassed so many at this point. We thought we'd better get you back on just to you know summarize everything that's happening out there. But for folks that missed it, you know, the last time that we talked, let's talk a bit about rural development at the USDA. What exactly it is, again, for people who just hear USDA and think, oh, you monitor corn prices or whatever the case may be. So tell us about that first from a general standpoint.
Yeah, so rural development is really exciting. It is one of a number of programs or departments within USDA. So as it stands right now, rural development has over 70 different programs that are available to individuals, businesses, as well as local governments in rural Wisconsin. So our programs range from assistance with purchasing single family homes to multifamily home rental assistance programs. And then we also have business development, job creation programs within our rural business and cooperative services. And then our community facilities programs, which helps local governments be able to either replace fire trucks, police vehicles, renovate town halls or libraries, put up a new fire station. And then we also have our broadband and high-speed internet with our telecommunications arm. And then we have assistance for electric cooperatives as well. So our history at rural development stretches all the way back to FDR and the New Deal, where it brought out, electricity out to rural parts of the United States. And so that is really where rural development got its start, and it's really exciting to see how this small but mighty department within USDA has grown. Because, like you said, most people think we either monitor corn prices or we inspect meat, and we do so much more than that.
So much more. And it comes back to, as we often try to explain pull the curtain back and explain some behind the scenes in government. One of the things that gets talked about, especially you and I from our previous positions, is something called earmarks, and that there is substantial space out there where in a legislature or in Congress that, you know, politicians will earmark certain spending for certain projects. That's one way that tax dollars, you know, get out the door. But another way is through programs like all of these, which are much more community-based and depend less on the politics and more on the merits in all of these different communities. And I mean, you can almost read an atlas of Wisconsin communities based on the many that you've been serving by providing, you know, funds for all these various projects. You know, one of the more recent ones is in the Reesburg area, right? That's the one for high speed internet. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it is exciting. The funding is going to Reedsburg Utility Commission, and it's a $28 million reconnect loan, and it will be used to deploy a fiber to premise network benefiting nearly 10,000 people, over 300 businesses, nearly 700 farms, and 8 educational facilities, and that is in 5 counties of Richland, Dane, Iowa, Juneau, and Sauk counties. So it's really important because this is a high-speed internet investment. It's part of the 4th funding round for the ReConnect program. And what we know is that in today's day and age, high-speed internet is just like the electricity when the REA and the New Deal brought electricity out to rural areas. Through ReConnect and some of the other programs that our sister agencies have in the federal government, we're helping to deploy high-speed internet out to rural areas, and it is so needed in today's digital world where students are using the internet, especially during the pandemic, to participate in virtual learning. We have telemedicine that's taking place, so residents don't have to leave their home to attend a medical appointment. And then businesses. I mean, the world is open for opportunity when they have a solid high-speed internet connection. So they could be doing business just across the community or somewhere on the other side of the world. So it really is exciting. And it's part of the Biden-Harris administration's Internet for All initiative, which is meant to The goal is to connect everyone in America to high-speed internet by 2030. So it's really exciting.
And then along with connecting them, it's one thing to get the fiber optic laid in rural parts of America that some of these big companies, you know, have not gotten around to yet, might not ever get around to if it weren't for programs like these. It's one thing to get those all strung up. It's another thing to make sure that service is affordable. It's, you know, if you can't afford the connection and you still have to go sit in a McDonald's parking lot to get Wi-Fi, you know, to get your kids' homework done, that's another thing altogether. So it's not just the connectivity, but it's the affordability is something that we have to be mindful of as well.
Right. And as part of the bipartisan infrastructure law, when it was passed and President Biden signed it into law, it included the Affordable Connectivity Program, which assists folks who need a little bit of help, but it offers a discount of up to $30 per month towards internet service to qualifying low-income households and up to $75 a month for households qualifying on tribal lands. So we want to make sure that if we're making investments into high-speed internet, people are able to connect to it, just like you said, because it doesn't do them any good if, you know, the cable is being laid and they don't have the money to be able to afford that high-speed internet. So that was really an important piece of this investment too by the administration.
I feel like we're doing a bit of a pop quiz for you here because, again, there's so many areas that you have to work in. And just as I'm looking through them, for example, there's, you know, that USDA Rural Development is reviewing, you know, rural housing programs. And, you know, rural housing is something we've talked about the housing crisis overall, affordable housing crisis. But certainly in rural areas and in rural areas that are still attracting workers, it's so important to have affordable housing options out there. So that's yet another thing that rural development is reviewing.
Right. And so we have our single family housing guaranteed program. So it helps individuals be able to purchase a home. And I know the housing market is tight right now. So that is available to help. But we also have what we call our single family 502 and 504 programs. So our 502 program helps low to very low income households be able to afford and buy a home through very low interest home loans. And then our 504 program helps individuals who are low and very low income as well, who own a home, be able to do necessary repairs. So, if it's someone who's over 65 years of age, they would like to stay in their home, but it needs some upgrades to make them, to make the home more livable, maybe like a walk-in shower or a ramp, something like that. They're able to be able to obtain a grant for that type of work. So, but if folks are interested in those programs, they should always go to our Wisconsin Rural Development website, and they can find out more, whether it's our single-family homes, multifamily homes, if they're interested in one of our rental programs. So I think it's an important resource, and not enough people, I think, know that it's there. So I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about these type of programs with
you. What's the website they should be looking for?
So if they just type in USDA Rural Development Wisconsin, it'll pop up right to our page.
Oh,
so
okay.
They can sign up for also to receive the same type of notices you get when we press releases or program announcements, things like that. They can sign up right there.
Okay.
It's just our public information officer does a great job in terms of really making sure it's up to date and providing the information that's necessary to access our programs.
And along with all of those other things, not just the sexy stuff, you know, the broadband, fiber optic and affordable housing, but I made the case at the top of the show, said that the whole part of highlighting the things that government does right, when you have public servants who care about efficient use of tax dollars, is that clean water comes out of the tap, and that the, shall we call it, the dirty water that leaves your house gets treated before it gets into the Chippewa River or anyplace else. And if you are in the city of Osseo, you are one of the latest recipients of $7 million for a new wastewater treatment facility. And this, too, is part of what you call the Rural Partners Network, Northwestern Wisconsin Community Network. Right. Again, this is all just to say, yeah, wastewater too. This has got to get fixed. This has got to be stay on top of it, and that's part of what your department, your job entails as well.
Right, and it was great. We Deputy Undersecretary for Rural Development, Farah Ahmad, joined us for a tour of the Osseo Wastewater Treatment Facility. We were able to look at kind of what the existing system looks like. It was built back in 1961, and then it was upgraded back in the mid 1980s and the early 2000s. But it has really exceeded its useful life. So the construction is currently underway with a completion estimated to be October of next year. But USDA Rural Development approved a loan for over $6 million for Osseo, as well as a grant of $850,000 through our water and waste disposal loans and grants program. And that investment makes that project and the construction work and be affordable for the city, the residents of the city of Osseo, as well as the businesses there. And then we also provided approved another loan for them for a little over $7.6 million. And then a grant of $750,000 through that same program, just to make sure that with the supply chain and some of the increasing prices that we've seen, that they were able to continue to move forward with that project and be able to do everything that they needed to do. So it's really exciting when we go into these communities like Osseo or Chautauqua. Last year, I visited with Chautauqua with Senator Baldwin. And there, the local officials were saying that the only reason why they were able to do the upgrade there because their wastewater treatment facility was flooding, it was beyond its useful life, was because of the funding assistance that they had received through Rural Development and the Biden-Harris administration.
You can't do it on your own. So don't tell me, I can spend my money better than the government unless you're treating your own wastewater. Somebody's got to be looking out for these things. And Julie Lassa and her team does that at Rural Development. Julie, so good to see you. Thank you very much. Can't wait to talk again soon.
Hey, sounds good. We didn't get through the whole list.
I know. So you'll be back. We did.
That sounds great.
Emergency
thanks so much,
rural
Pat.
Health care so much. Thanks, Julie. Todd Alba's coming up next. You're up north.
The kids are heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Teachers learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, sunshine, a high near 73. Mostly clear tonight, lows around 53. Sunny with a high near 79 on your Thursday. For Thursday night, partly cloudy, lows around 59. Friday, sunny, breezy, and a high near 87. Winds gust to 30 miles per hour.
It's 51 at our studios.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
All right, before we wrap things up for a Wednesday, I do want to make sure that I note again, in case you missed it earlier, the story that's breaking from Lawrence Andrea from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel out of the 3rd Congressional District in western Wisconsin, that two of the candidates who ran in the primary last year, Deb McGrath and State Senator Brad Paff, now say they will not be running in 2024 to challenge Derek Van Orden in the 3rd Congressional District. Now, in both cases, Deb McGrath cited some personal reasons, and of course for Brad Paff, he would have to give up his state Senate seat this time around, and that would give Republicans a shot on building on their majority in the state Senate. So Paff is doing certainly the right thing by his community, even though it always is not fun when you have a potential opportunity to run for higher office, but you have to let that pass this time around. And then that leaves Rebecca Cook, near as I can tell, as the only declared candidate so far looking to run against Derek Van Orden. Rebecca Cook also ran in that four-way primary last year for Democrats. Mark Newman was the other candidate. Now, there are some other folks who say they have been considering a run. There's Stevens Point State Assembly Representative Katrina Shanklin, who said she's being encouraged by many folks and is considering it. Former La Crosse County Board Chair Tara Johnson said she is weighing a bid as well. Missy Hughes, the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation and a member of Governor Evers' cabinet, said she has not ruled out a bid for the seat, though according to Lawrence's news article here, multiple Democrats in the state have expressed doubts over whether she will run and that she did not respond to a recent text message that was seeking comment on that. Now, does this mean that people are looking at Derek Van Orden, the freshman Republican, as some kind of, you know, formidable foe? No, the answer is absolutely not. If nothing at this point, the appearance is that the decks are being cleared so that instead of a divisive primary, people coalesce around a candidate. Now, is that going to happen with Rebecca Cook? Does it mean that Katrina Shanklin, Tara Johnson, Missy Hughes, others won't get in? It's way too early to say. But right now, you know, Democrats have been talking amongst themselves. They know how badly Democrats at the national level lost this seat. They assumed that Derek Van Orden was in a stronger position than we all knew that he actually was. He was not in that strong of a position. He has proven to not be up for the job based on his conduct and based on his positions. And so if Democrats do coalesce around a single candidate, either before or after the primary, and if Democratic national Democratic level groups and leaders don't write off Western Wisconsin too early again, it is quite likely that that seat comes back into Democratic hands, one that Ron Kind held for so many years. Here with a differing opinion to tell me how wrong I am on everything that I talk about, we bring in Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show. Mr. Alba, how are you? You're on the phone, so maybe I better start by saying, how are you? Are you okay? Are you locked in a closet anyplace or anything? What's the honor of not being able to see your smiling face?
I'm fine. The voice is a little rough. I've been this darn sinus stuff is coming back. And B, as Mr. Zommers will tell you, as I talked ad nauseum for 45 minutes yesterday on our show, I am battling the Spectrum people, the Spectrum Charter cable company. Last night, I had my fifth technician in 2 months to my apartment.
Any luck?
And I'll spare you all the details, but he ran into, by happenstance, by the grace of God, by the universe, he ran into one of my neighbors, apparently, who is having the exact same problem. And after telling these people for 2 months that this is the case, finally last night they believed me. And so this morning I have their supervisor coming out. So it was a crazy night, and my alarm was not set properly. So my sincere apologies.
Well, do you know, I think you and your neighbor, I'm pretty sure I'm understanding what the problem is. You know, if you actually pay for those channels, you don't have to squint through the scrambled signal and see exactly what you should be paying for. Is that the issue this time around?
I'm actually paying for what I owe up until my service went bad. And, mm-hmm. and so, no, it's not that I'm behind on payments. It's just that they finally admitted that it was their fault.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood to explain the concept of pay-per-view that you actually pay to get a view of this thing. So I saw a social media post for the show, and I saw that it mentioned, I think, Spectrum Horror Stories. And so I knew there was going to be something here for you to tell me about. And I'm going to be one of those that says, look, it was Spectrum. Before that, it was Charter. Before that, it was Time Warner. Before that, I can't even remember what the name was, but I've been with the same cable company for 28 years. And it seems like about once a year, something goes wrong I don't know if it's the way the house is wired or whatever. And a technician comes in, and in less than 5 minutes, usually, it's working again. So, you know, thank goodness for people that are actually trained in this kind of thing. So I hope that's all it takes is maybe one more 5 minute visit, and we get you back fully connected the way you should be.
I'm hoping. Remember the old show Grizzly Adams, Pat? Remember that show?
Yeah. Yes.
Remember, Denver Pyle played, what was the old curmudgeon? He also played Uncle Jesse on Dukes of Hazzard. What was that character's name? Anyway, he had so many mules that he called his mule number seven. So that's why I'm down to calling my Spectrum people just their number. So this morning will be number six. I'll have Spectrum guy number six. And I'm hoping that number six will put me over the top.
Jeepers.
I'm hoping that will do the trick.
Oh my goodness. I completely forgot about the Life and Times of Grizzly Adams, and
that
was a great show, but it only is like 1977 to 78 or something like that.
In my opinion.
Yes, yeah, because I mean, we all need experience living as a mountain man somewhere in the coolies and the bluffs.
Mountain Man Jack, that was the character's name, Jack.
Mountain Man Jack. All right. Well, again, enjoy your time. Enjoy your time being Amish for a little bit longer, and we'll look forward to your show coming up this afternoon at 1 o'clock, if you're willing.
I'm very willing, and thank you for understanding. I will be much more punctual to class next Wednesday.
Not a worry, Mr. Alba. Thank you. Have a wonderful day. or at least as best a day as you can. We appreciate that. Thanks, Todd. Hey, that's going to do it for us. Again, sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Follow us at UpNorthNewsWI on all the social medias. And you can catch me at Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter and all those other fun channels. Hey, we'll do this again on a Thursday morning starting at 6 a.m. where it's another beautiful day up north. See you tomorrow.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.